finished playing now, were sitting on the stage, still sweaty, legs dangling over the side. Danny bounced the ball on St. Pat's floor. "Unless he left while I was in school today."
"You haven't seen him since..."
"No," Danny said. "But no biggie. You know how my dad is." He turned to look at Will and shrugged. "Sometimes he's as hard to cover as ever."
"Yeah," Will said. "I know what you mean."
Danny thinking, "But how could you know, really?" Danny knew how most people in Middletown were still obsessed with Richie Walker's comings and goings, how the town biddies still loved to gossip up a storm about the biggest star to ever come out of here, the kid who put Middletown on the map because of travel basketball, the kid who finally made it to the NBA, then left his wife and child not too long after the car accident that ended his career. They didn't really know anything about his dad, any more than people who'd only ever seen him play on television or read about him in the newspapers knew about his dad. Of course, Danny felt the exact same way sometimes. Not that he was going to put an ad in the Middletown Dispatch about that. Danny said, "You don't have to stay until they come." Will, whose hair looked even more like steel wool when he'd start to sweat, the Bob Marley t-shirt his parents had brought him back from Jamaica, looking as wet as if he'd just gone swimming in it off Main Beach, said,
"Correction, you don't have to stay."
"They're going to be practicing here for a couple of months," Danny said.
"I'm going to have to see them around here eventually. I might as well get it out of the way today."
He hopped off the stage.
"Like I said, I'm not running away, dude."
Will sighed, the sound like air coming out of a balloon.
"No, why do something like that when you can get your butt run over by the Springers instead?"
"Don't take this the wrong way," Danny said, "but I don't remember asking for your opinion about any of this."
"Let me ask you something," Will said. "When have I ever cared whether you asked for my opinion or not?"
"You want me to spot you 7 this time?"
Will said, "I don't want your pity. Make it 6.
They were finishing that game when Ty Ross showed up, the first of the Middletown Vikings. Ty Ross had gotten both taller and skinnier during the summer, which Danny knew from the tryouts. He also knew Ty was still great. Could still dribble with either hand, shoot with either hand when he got close into the basket, see the whole court as if he had 2 sets of eyes going for him. He would pass the ball if somebody else even remotely had a better shot than he did every single time. Sometimes he would just give it up because, in addition to all his other qualities as a ball player, Ty Ross was completely unselfish, sometimes to a fault. He wasn't the fastest kid in town, wasn't nearly as fast as Danny was, but he knew when to drive to the basket, when to step back and make one from the outside, from as far away as the 3-point arc in the gym at Middletown High, when to pull the ball down and just set the offense all over again. As far as Danny was concerned, Ty knew as much about the way the game should be played as he did. The two of them just seemed to know stuff that other kids their age didn't. Ty had been that way when they played 5th grade travel together, and when they'd played 6th grade travel together. He didn't just know more about basketball than the rest of the players. He knew more than the coaches, too. He sure knew more than any parent yelling at them to do this or that from the stands. All in the name of being good sports parents, of course. That even went for Ty's dad, who, according to Danny's dad, acted as if he'd invented basketball, not Dr. James Naismith. "You know those peach baskets Dr. Naismith used for the first basketball games?" Richie Walker had said one time. "Jeff Ross thinks he invented those, too." On top of everything else, Ty Ross was such a nice kid that Will Stoddard said it made him physically ill. He had dark hair, like his father, almost black, cut short this school year, his summer buzz still not having grown all the way out. He was wearing his own baggy basketball shorts, looking even baggier on him because his legs were so skinny they looked like stick figure legs somebody had drawn on him. He was wearing a maroon Williams College t-shirt that looked to be about 3 sizes too big. Williams, Danny knew, was where Mr. Ross had gone to school. Allie Walker had told Danny once that Ty was the player his father had always wanted to be, that he'd been the 2nd best player on the Vikings team that had won the World Series behind Richie Walker, and that it had been pretty much the same way in high school. Danny's dad had then selected Syracuse, and the chance to play in front of 30 or 40,000 people every night in the Carrier Dome, after passing on most of the big ACC schools and even schools as far away as UCLA. Mr. Ross, who had the grades, thought he'd have a better chance to play at a small school like Williams. Only he didn't, his mom said, never getting off the bench there before quitting the team his senior year. You know how your father says that the town never got over their team winning the Travel Team World Series? His mom said. I'm not sure Tyler's dad ever got over being number two to your father during all their growing up years. So, Danny remembered saying to her that night, Mr. Ross was a real number two guard. That's basketball talk, right? Mom, he said, you know the point guard is called a one, the shooting guard is called a two, the center... Stop, she said, and not for the first time when the subject was basketball. I'll pay the ransom. Ty and Danny had been teammates, starters both of them, on the fifth grade team. Same thing the next year, just not teammates this year, and maybe not ever again. Now Danny watched as Ty came walking toward him with that pigeon-toed walk of his, walking straight down the middle of the gym, Danny knowing as he watched him what every kid in town knew already, that for as long as Ty Ross lived in Middletown, he was going to be the best kid walking into every gym. All this time later, Danny thought to himself, it had worked out that a walker was finally jealous of a Ross when it came to playing basketball. Ty saw them over by the stage and came over, dribbling his own ball as he did. Hey, dude, Danny said to him. Ty got right to it, not messing around, not even bothering with a greeting of his own. You should have made it, he said. I should have called you as soon as I found out. You can ask my mom. I told her that night that you should have made it ahead of a lot of the guys who did. It was the closest thing to a speech for him, coming out almost as if he'd rehearsed it. Thanks, Danny said, not knowing what else to say. Wondering if Ty had expressed that same opinion to his dad, even though Ty was probably as intimidated by Mr. Ross as everybody else in town was. Ty wouldn't let it go, as if this had been bothering him all week as much as it had bothered Danny himself. You can play rings around some of the guards they picked ahead of you, and you know how to play better than everybody they picked ahead of you, that's for sure. And the whole thing is stupid, and I wanted you to know it. Quick heads up, Will said. I wouldn't let any of those other nose-pickers who got picked ahead of our boy hear you saying that. Will, Danny said in a sharp voice, I will pay you to shut up. Will said, I hate to reduce our relationship to money, but how much? Then he said he was going to beat the soft drink machine out of a Coke, and did they want anything? Danny and Ty both said no. Now it was just Danny and Ty in the gym. Ty said, you want to shoot around a little? Nah, Danny said. Will and me have got to be someplace. Maybe next week when you guys are here or something. You lied enough, it got easier. That had been his experience, though pretty limited. Later, he said. Later, Ty Ross said. Danny found Will at the soda machine and told him he was meeting his mom soon, which was technically true, as long as you had a pretty loose definition of the word soon. I'll call you later, Danny said, or check you out on the computer. Either way, Will said, you know my motto, we never close. Then he whipped out his cell phone again to call his brother. The last thing Danny heard as Will walked down the hall was him saying, great news, you need to come get me at school. Then Danny saw him nod his head before saying, you can thank me later. Danny wasn't meeting his mother anytime soon. She was going to be later than usual on this Friday because she had promised to handle drama club rehearsals for Sister Marlene, the drama teacher at St. Pat's who had been out sick for a couple of days. The big first semester production this year was Guys and Dolls, with Bren D'Arcy playing one of the lead roles, a gambler named Nathan Detroit. Just remember Nate Archibald, one of our all-time faves out of ancient history, Bren had said, and the Detroit Pistons. They both loved Nate Archibald, because his nickname as a player had been Tiny. Allie Walker had said that rehearsal went from 4:30 to 6:30, which had been just fine with Danny at the time. It meant more gym time for him, It wouldn't have been that way a few years ago, when this auditorium had served as both a gym and a theater at St. Pat's. But since then, the annual fund drive had raised enough money, and the kids had chipped in with money of their own, and now Drama Club kids held both rehearsals and the plays themselves in the brand new theater that had been built next to the lower school. Only now, he couldn't make himself leave the gym. He knew he was better off going over and sneaking into the theater, up in the top row, watching Bren try to sing so he could bust his chops to the high heavens on Monday. Except here he was, like he was nailed to the spot on the old stage at St. Pat's. Here he was in what used to be the wings, stage right, peering through the sliding panel some St. Pat's kids had fashioned in the old days, like a sliding door, so on the night of the school play, the kids could look out when they weren't on the stage trying to remember their lines, watching the audience while the audience watched them. That was where Danny was watching the Middletown Vikings as they began their first practice. In the past, the Middletown Basketball Association had hired outside coaches, usually young, to coach the various travel teams in town, boys and girls, from fifth grade until the travel program ended in eighth. Danny had loved his coach for the last 2 years, a cool black guy in his 20s named Kelvin Norris, who'd thought nothing of making the 2-hour car ride out from Queens twice a week, sometimes 3 times a week, for travel practices and games. Sometimes during the season, when there had been a Friday night game followed by a Saturday morning game, Coach Kel would stay over at the Walker's house, or the Darcy's, to the point where most of the travel team parents considered him part of the family. After coaching fifth grade his first year and sixth grade the next, moving up with them to the next level, everybody had just assumed that Coach Kel would move up again this season and work with the seventh graders. But then, over the summer, Mr. Ross had called up Coach Kel at the summer camp he ran in the Catskills and told him that he, Mr. Ross, planned to coach the seventh graders himself this season. Coach Kel had called Danny when it happened, wanting him to know, saying, "I think Mr. Ross's first choice to coach Ty all the way into the national spotlight was Phil Jackson. Obviously, his second choice was himself." "But everybody wants to play for you," Danny said. "Including Ty. Especially Ty. I don't think he's crazy about having his dad as his dad. Having him as a coach will probably just make him crazy." That was when it still mattered to Danny who was going to coach the Vikings this season. "Before I get too much older," Coach Kel said, "I've got to get as good at kissing butt as I am with those X's and O's and that passion for the game stuff." Mr. Ross said Middletown Basketball loved Coach Kel's enthusiasm so much that he wanted him to drop back and work with the fifth graders. Coach Kel turned him down, saying he wanted to work with older kids, not younger kids. Danny didn't know what Coach Kel was doing now, whether he was coaching somewhere or just teaching phys ed at Christ the King High School. Danny just knew that kneeling at the middle of the court with all the players around him, speaking in such a low voice that Danny couldn't hear what he was saying from his hiding place, was Mr. Ross. Coach Mr. Ross, that's what he'd probably have them call him. Danny could see all of the usual suspects out there, trying to act as if they were fascinated by whatever pep talk or sermon Ty's dad was giving them. There was Ty's best friend, Teddy Moran, who was going to be one of the point guards on the team, along with the kid from Colorado, Andy Main. Danny noticed that Andy, who'd had long hair almost down to his shoulders for the tryouts, now looked as if he'd gotten his hair buzzed to look like Ty's. He was also wearing the same McGrady sneakers as Ty. Top of the line, $100, maybe more. Andy's hair and sneakers at least made Danny smile. A lot of kids who grew up in Middletown tried to copy Ty Ross. Now the new kid from Colorado was the latest to run with the crowd. Danny saw the two black kids on the team, two of the coolest kids in the whole town, Alex Aaron and Daryl Mullins, both of them as long and skinny as Ty. Towering above everybody was Jack Hardy, star tight end on Middletown's 12-year-old travel football team. Jack, with his dark complexion, looking big and wide like some dark-colored Hummer H2, was a born rebounder, stronger than everybody else his age, one who had a way of finding the ball once the people around him stopped flying off in different directions, like characters he'd just terminated in a blood-gore video game. Jack Hardy was also famous in Middletown for being the only seventh grader who had already started shaving. Huge deal. So there they all were, Ty and Teddy, Alex and Daryl and Jack and the rest of them, Mr. Ross reaching into the big bag he had next to him and passing out practice jerseys, the guys trying those on before Mr. Ross went into the bag and came out with more goodies, long-sleeved navy blue shooting shirts you could wear over your jersey while you were warming up. Great, Danny thought. What did Tess and her friends call it when they went girly girl shopping? Accessorizing? Now they were even doing that with travel basketball.
First class for you guys all the way,
Mr. Ross said when he was done passing everything out. He was walking toward the stage now, where he'd left his bag of basketballs, walking straight at Danny as if he'd noticed the narrow hole in the wall.
First class all the way for a team that's going all the way this season.
He was a little taller than Danny's dad. Danny was always struck first by how tall somebody was always playing off this adult's height against somebody else's. He did the same with kids, like he was comparison shopping, never really knowing how tall other kids were in feet and inches, even if he knew exactly what he was on a daily basis, exactly 55 inches, no sneakers, by his last check in the doorframe of his room. 55. The speed limit. He kept looking through the narrow space, feeling as if he were on the wrong side of a fence.
One ball,
Mr. Ross said, taking a single ball brand new out of the bag.
Three lines at the other end. Big guys, and there's more size on this team than ever, and not by accident, in the middle. I want you to bounce the ball off the backboard, grab it like it's a rebound, make an outlet pass to the guard on your right. Then, guards, you pass it to the guy cutting to the middle from the other wing. Cut behind your passes, and make sure to get the lead out of those hefty bag shorts you all like to wear.
He threw the ball to the other end of the court and blew the whistle he was wearing around his neck. Some of these guys love their whistles as much as they do their clipboards, Danny thought.
I don't want to see that ball touching the floor,
Mr. Ross said from underneath the basket closest to the stage, giving another quick blast to his whistle, as if he were using it like punctuation marks.
This is going to be a team that passes the ball, not a team that dribbles the ball.
The first three-man fast break came right at Danny. Jack Hardy started the play at the other end, wheeling around after he came down with his fake rebound, throwing a hard two-hand chest pass to Teddy, who got it to Ty, cutting toward the middle of the court from the other wing. Ty gave it back to Jack Hardy with so little effort, so quickly, it was as if the ball had never passed through his hands at all. Jack passed it back to Teddy, who waited a couple of beats too long, hesitated just enough when he fed Ty near the basket. Ty needs me passing him the ball, Danny told himself, even in a boring drill like this, that Ty had to go underneath the rim and then twist his body around in the air to make a neat reverse layup. As soon as those three got out of the way, here came the next three players on the break, Alex and Daryl so fast filling their lanes that they left fat Eric Buford behind, Eric's face already the color of one of the fat tomatoes Allie Walker grew in her backyard garden. Danny Walker, his hands pressing against the wall above him, watching like he had a hidden camera, felt his knees buckle suddenly without warning, the way they'd buckle when one of your buddies snuck up behind you and gave them a little karate chop. Felt his heart sink at the same time. He slid the board back in place, placed his forehead against it, stayed like that for a minute, listening to the basketball sounds from the other side of the wall, seeing it all with his hole closed up, with his eyes closed. His gym. Their team. Hey, little guy, he thought to himself, using the refrain he'd heard his whole life. You're right back where you started, little guy. You're with the wrong group again. Chapter 6. Danny Walker didn't pick up a basketball for a week, Friday to Friday, a personal best, or worst. He didn't play the weekend after that first Vikings practice at St. Pat's, or after dinner the first couple of nights of the next week. When his mom finally asked him about it on Tuesday, he shrugged and said, "My knee's been bothering me a little bit, is all." "An injury?" she said, giving him that raised eyebrow deal that Danny figured girls must master at, like, the age of 10 and then always have in their bag of tricks after that.
to my $6 million bionic boy? Excuse me?
Never mind, she said, looking a little embarrassed. I don't need other people to remind me I'm getting older. I do it to myself, constantly.
You're still young, he said, as a mild form of protest.
Well, not if I'm coming at you with old TV shows like The $6 Million Man. It was about this hunky guy who was half hunky guy and half superhuman robot.
Danny said, how big did they make him?
She acted as if she hadn't heard him.
Is your knee really hurting you? She asked. Should I call Dr. Jim?
He had muted the Knicks-Timberwolves preseason game he'd been watching when she'd come into the room. Now he pointed the remote at the set and let the voices of Marv Albert and Walt Frazier rejoin them.
I think I'll just rest it a couple more days, Danny said.
By the way, she said, when are the tryouts for Y basketball?
Coming up pretty soon, he said, trying to be as vague as possible. Will mentioned something about that the other day, I think.
It would be fun if the two of you ended up on the same team.
On television, Frazier was talking about somebody whooping and swooping, then swishing and dishing, but Danny had missed the play.
Really fun, he said. Fun, fun, fun.
Is that sarcasm, Daniel Walker?
Just kidding, he said.
Always the last line of defense, whether you were kidding or not. He muted the set again.
Have you seen Dad?
At the candy kitchen the other day when I ran in to grab a sandwich. He was at the same seat at the counter he's been sitting at since high school. I'm going to petition the town to give it landmark status.
By himself? Danny said. Not doing anything?
Yes, his mom said in a voice so soft it surprised him, just because of who they were talking about. That's exactly what he was doing. Sitting alone, not talking to anybody, not doing anything except drinking a cup of coffee.
She came off the couch and knelt next to the easy chair. Is there something you want to talk about that we're not talking about here? Like this knee of yours, maybe, and how maybe that's not the thing that's keeping you off the court?
He looked past her to the Knicks game. You had to be careful about eye contact sometimes. Eye contact could get you every time, and said, what would you think if I didn't, like, play basketball this year? Danny had to give his mom credit. She didn't start yelling about it on the spot, though that didn't actually surprise him. She'd never been one of those parents who felt like she had to pump up the volume every time there was a disagreement in the house or you stepped out of line. Even when she got really mad at you about something, she didn't act as if you'd suddenly gone deaf. Even when you were talking about quitting basketball, at least for the time being.
You've always played, from the time you were big enough, she said,
meaning old enough.
Maybe I need a break is all.
At the age of 12?
What she'd do in moments like this was she'd start straightening up the room, moving magazines about an inch one way or the other on the coffee table, fluffing up pillows on the couch that didn't need fluffing, waiting him out a little bit.
Danny said, Mr. Fleming has baseball workouts all winter at the tennis bubble, just about every weekend.
Danny Walker played second base in baseball, always batted leadoff because of his size, and he was good. Just not as good as he was in basketball. At least, as good as he used to think he was in basketball.
You could do both, she said,
straightening a picture of her parents on the wall now.
Like I said, I'm just thinking that maybe I need a little break.
Allie Walker said, and what other essentials do you plan to take a break from now that travel basketball didn't work out for you? Eating and sleeping and bathing regularly?
Danny tried to lighten the mood in the room a little bit, fluff things up a little himself.
Is that sarcasm, Allison Walker?
She didn't want to play.
Have you decided that Y-ball is some kind of step down?
Only on account of it is a step down.
Not every single good basketball-playing boy in this town is on travel, she said, and don't say on account of.
Sorry, he said.
And yes, all the good kids in town are on travel, unless they're playing hockey or something.
You need basketball, she said, again with a soft voice.
Well, it sure doesn't need me.
Standoff. They had them sometimes.
So you're telling me you're quitting?
Not quitting permanently, Mom.
just for one season. She had run out of things to move around, so she stood in the middle of the room between him and the Knicks game, hands on hips. Danny saw that one long piece of hair had somehow gotten loose and had fallen over one eye. She blew it out of the way now, which sounded more like she was blowing off steam. "I think you need to talk to your father on this one." They both knew she never called him in. On anything. Sometimes, when he was in the house, when they were in the kitchen and Danny was upstairs eavesdropping, he would hear her say, "When I want your advice on parenting, I'll send up a flare." In those moments, Danny wouldn't even recognize his mom's voice, as if it were another person doing the talking down there. "I was planning to call Dad, actually, so I could tell him myself." She walked past him, probably on her way to straighten up the whole kitchen, do the dinner dishes all over again, or mop the floor, saying to herself, as much as him, "His two specialties, playing ball and quitting things." Danny had forgotten to shut his computer off, so it was still on when he went up to his room, the screen giving off its spooky glow in the otherwise dark room like a blue nightlight. He'd also forgotten to go offline. He went over, sat down at his desk, was about to shut the whole thing down for the night, not even giving one last check to the sports news at ESPN.com, when he heard the goofy instant message sound. The old doodly-doo, his mom called it, the music of our lives, come out of it. At the same time, a message box appeared in the upper left-hand corner of the screen. He closed his eyes, knowing he was worn out from talking to Will in real life, and he certainly wasn't in the mood to talk to him electronically, especially at this time of night. But when he looked closer, he saw it wasn't from Will Studd, his screen name. The sender was Contessa 44. Tess, sitting at her own computer in her second-floor bedroom at 44 Butter Lane. Contessa 44. "Hey, you there?" "Hello. Calling Mr. Crossover." Crossover 2 was his screen name, for obvious reasons. "Crossover 2. I'm here." By now, Tess knew that Danny wasn't any more chatty in their personal chat room than he was in person. She liked to joke that he had completely mastered the language of instant messaging, which she called instant shorthand. She also knew to be patient with him, even when he was only tapping out a couple of words, because he couldn't type nearly as fast as she could. He'd been with her at her computer once while she talked online to Emma, who Tess said was slower than boiling water, and saw how Tess bopped her head from side to side while she waited for Emma to hold up her end of the conversation, occasionally moved from side to side in her chair like it was sitting down dancing. Contessa 44. "What's up?" Crossover 2. "Just chillin', you know." Contessa 44. "Oh, I get it. The big hip-hopper." Crossover 2. "JK." More instant shorthand for "just kidding." Contessa 44. "I know. You were acting weird today. You okay?" He waited a second and imagined her waiting for him, doing the head bop, the side-to-side sway. He hit the two letters. Then send. Crossover 2. "No." Contessa 44. "What up, dog?" Crossover 2. "Now who's the hip-hopper?" Contessa 44. "Seriously?" Danny took a deep breath as a way of taking his time, telling himself he didn't need to get into this with her now, but knowing he wanted to in the worst way. Crossover 2. "I'm thinking about skipping b-ball this year." It took so little time for the doodly-doo to come right back at him, he imagined their words colliding somewhere over Route 37, the road that divided Middletown in half. Contessa 44. "No, no, 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 no!" Crossover 2. "Why not?" Now he was the one who waited. Contessa 44. "Because basketball is who you are. Like taking pictures is for me. It's your gift, D.W., no matter what the dumb basketball dads say. You can't quit. If you quit, they win." Crossover 2. "I'm just thinking about it is all." Contessa 44. "Stop thinking about it right now. That's an order." Crossover 2. You sound like a second mom. Contessa 44. Wrong. I'm just your first biggest fan. Talk more tomorrow. Love, Tess. Crossover 2. Back at you. With the last part, I mean. He was reaching for the power button when he heard the goofy sound one more time. Contessa 44. I know. Danny always imagined there was some all-seeing, all-knowing computer god somewhere up there in microchip hard drive heaven, monitoring all the computer monitors, checking out all conversations like this, keeping a permanent record like they did at school, knowing that Tess Hewitt always managed to get the word love into the conversation with Danny Walker, and how he never stopped her or made a joke about it. He washed up, brushed his teeth, got into bed, hooked his hands behind his head, stared up at the poster of John Stockton on his ceiling, feeling tired all of a sudden, knowing his eyes weren't going to stay open for long. Still thinking about Tess, though. The tall girl. He didn't know exactly how to describe the feelings he had for her, just knowing that outside of his parents and Ball, he couldn't think of anything or anybody he cared about more. He smiled to himself, the first time he'd felt like smiling all night or all week, thinking at the same time, if it wasn't love for the 12 and under division, it was certainly in the picture. But he was still quitting. Chapter 7. The biggest public park in Middletown, McFeely Park, was about 3 blocks from the middle of downtown, and included 1 regulation baseball diamond, 2 little league fields, all the ball fields with lights. There were 4 lighted tennis courts, a playground for kids, and taking up the whole northeast corner of McFeely, the part closest to town, was what all the kids called Duck Poop Pond, the kids finding it somewhat less charming than the adults who brought small children there to feed the butt-ugly ducks and little ducklings who resided there. Up on a hill, past the tennis courts, was Middletown's best outdoor public basketball court, with lights of its own. In many ways, the downtown area wasn't really the main plaza in Middletown. McFeely Park was. Danny sometimes thought that Middletown, even as small as it was, should be broken up into different divisions, the way sports leagues were. There were the spring school kids and their parents, and the St. Pat's people. There were the people who lived in the Springs, the nicer section of town, south of Route 37, and the ones who lived on the north side, where Danny and his mom lived, known as the Flats.
"We call it the Flats anyway," Will Stoddard liked to say. "People in the Springs call it the Pits."
But there was always one day in the fall when the whole town came together for the McFeely Fair. It was organized by the Chamber of Commerce to raise money for the upkeep of the pond, the fields, the courts, the playground, all the land donated by the McFeely family, which had originally owned about half of Middletown. On the last Saturday in October, McFeely Park was turned into a combination of amusement park and county fair, with rides and games and booths where you could dunk teachers and coaches, even a local garage band, picked every year in a big battle of the bands, providing the music. Other than maybe an important Middletown High football game, it was the one day of the year when the town actually felt like one town.
"Look," Tess said as she kept training her camera on the people in the crowds, "Middletown being nice to Middletown."
Tess loved taking pictures the way Danny loved basketball. She'd even had a few of them published in the Dispatch. Color, black and white, it didn't matter. The ones she'd allow Danny to see, when she'd allow him to see her work, were always great. She liked to tell him that the way he liked to play in the dark, she liked to play in a dark room.
"I think I even saw Mr. Ross looking happy enough to qualify as an actual human being," she said.
"It's some kind of trick," Danny said, "like you big-time photographers do with lighting and stuff."
Somehow she had been able to ditch Emma. Even more amazingly, Will had decided to work, his dad having offered to pay him to handle one of the dunking booths. Will said he needed the money, and that you could never go wrong watching a science teacher do what he called the Finding Nemo thing. So it was just Danny and Tess. She had gone through 2 rolls of film already, He'd won her a stuffed animal by throwing a softball into the top of an old-fashioned milk bucket. After she'd picked out the huge characters she instantly named Mr. Bear, she asked the St. Pat's mom running the softball game, Mrs. Damiecki, to take a picture of the two of them.
"Come on," Tess said when Danny started grumping about it. "It'll take 1 second."
She was smiling as she said it. Danny could see by looking up at her. It killed him sometimes, having to look up at her. When Mrs. Damiecki told them to smile, he gave Tess and Mr. Bear a poke and got her laughing so she wouldn't notice him getting up on the balls of his feet and making himself taller. Now Tess said,
"Let's go up to the basketball court. I want to take some shots of the game in case I want to be a photographer for Sports Illustrated someday."
She made it sound casual, but he knew what she was doing. They'd both seen some of the seventh-grade springers shooting around. There'd be pickup games going on all day at the McFeely Fair if the weather was nice enough, and it was beautiful today. The crowd around the court had been growing for the last hour, as if people were looking for a diversion from the dunking and Ferris wheel and junky food and garage band music that sounded like broken electric guitars and overamped speakers.
"Let's go back over to the dunking pool," Danny said. "I'll even give up my body and let you take a picture of me doing my imitation of Leonardo going down for the count in Titanic."
"Oh, come up the hill with me," Tess said, in her red plaid shirt and jeans that made her legs look longer than Danny's whole body, in her cute pigtails. The tall girl, looking like a million bucks.
"You don't have to play," she said. "We'll just watch."
"You want me to play?"
"Wherever would you get an idea like that?"
Danny said,
"I don't have the right sneaks."
They both looked down at his Air Force Ones with the hole in the right toe, as if on cue.
"They sure look like basketball shoes to me," Tess said, "or were something very, very close to basketball shoes at one time."
"Well, they've been bothering me."
"Somehow," she said, "I don't think it's your Nikes bothering you."
"What's that supposed to mean?"
"It means that unless you've come down with some sort of weird virus, you would play ball barefoot if you knew there was a game anywhere near you."
"I thought we were having a good time," he said. "God," he thought, "now you sound like a girl."
"It's time you started playing ball again," she said.
She had been maneuvering him up the hill as they talked, pushing him along, Danny in front of her. When he turned around, they were nearly eye to eye for once.
"Who told you I haven't been playing ball?" he said.
She gave a toss to her hair, even though Danny noticed there wasn't any hair in her eyes, then gave him one of her know-everything looks with that raised eyebrow. One of those looks that seemed to say, "I know what you had for breakfast, whether or not you remembered to brush your teeth today, and if you're wearing clean underwear." Danny said,
"You talk to my mom."
Tess made a typing motion in the air in front of her.
"Doodly-doo,"
she said. There was a mix of St. Pat's kids and Springs kids laughing and pushing each other at half court as Ty and Bren Darcy tried to organize the teams. They weren't doing it by school or going from tallest to smallest, Danny saw, just trying to make the best and fairest sides. Jack Hardy went with Bren, Daryl Mullins went with Ty. Alex Aaron, wearing an oversized Julius Erving replica jersey from the old New York Nets, went with Bren. Danny stood next to Tess, who was casually snapping her pictures, and thought to himself, kids always did the best job making the best game, especially when they took the old dad factor out of the equation. It was Ty Ross who spotted Danny first. Tess saw and gave Danny a little nudge with her elbow.
"Uh-oh," she said. "You've been made, as they say in the cop shows."
"You don't watch cop shows."
"I try to keep up."
Without even hesitating, Ty said,
"I've got Danny."
They all turned to where Danny and Tess were standing.
"Wait a second," Bren said, trying to sound indignant. "I didn't know he was in the available talent pool."
Daryl Mullins said, "It's the McFeely Fair, Darcy, not draft day on ESPN.
Ty said, "You in, Walker?"
They were still all looking at him. Danny looked at Tess, then back at Ty, and smiled.
"I'm in."
"These aren't fair sides now,"
Teddy Moran said. He'd already been picked by Ty and was standing with the rest of his team.
"I'll make them fair," Ty said.
Teddy, you and Andy go with Bren now. We'll take Danny and Matt.
Teddy Moran, career complainer, said,
I don't care about the squirt, but Matt gives you guys too much height.
Daryl Mullins, in that laid-back way he had, said,
But you give him more lip, Moran.
Teddy reluctantly moved over with Bren's guys, trying to give Danny the playground stare-down with his small pig eyes as he did. Teddy Moran, every kid in Middletown knew, thought there was something in the town charter that said he was always supposed to be on Ty Ross's team. Ty and Bren sorted out the rest of the sides. It wasn't quite warm enough for them to play shirts against skins. They all just agreed they'd have to know what everybody on their team was wearing. Right before Ty and Andy shot to see who got the ball, Danny gave a little wave to Tess. She looked at him without changing expression and snapped his picture, barely focusing it, using one hand, looking like a pro already. What Richie Walker saw, wearing an old blue Middletown baseball cap, slouched against a tree on the pond side of McFeely. He saw his kid and the Ross kid play as if they were Stockton and Malone, except the Ross kid had more imagination already than Malone ever had with his catch-and-shoot game, had more of a feel for everything, was more interesting to watch. That's what he saw. And this. Nobody on the court could guard the Ross kid straight up, and nobody, not even the tiny kid with the freckles who'd helped pick the teams, the one who was like this crazed mini-me, could get in front of Danny. With all the joking around and what he was sure was small fry trash talking, all the fake beefs about fouls and who had really knocked the ball out of bounds, with the way the kids in the game kept playing to the kids in the crowd, Richie couldn't take his eyes off Danny and Ty Ross. They were doing what good, smart players could always do. Make the game nice. The word, nice, actually made him smile, the way some old song could make you smile if you just heard one lick of it. He'd had a teammate on the Warriors, Rayford Tipton, a forward out of the University of Miami, a dude with the hair rose and the tattoos and the strut. When Richie would hit Rayford Tipton just right on the break, Rayford would run past him when they were getting back on defense and say, Richie Walker, that was nice. Making the word sound like it had three or four syllables in it, making it sound as if what Richie had just done with the ball was practically illegal. Danny and Ty Ross were nice. They worked the pick and roll. When they had a chance to get out and run on the fast break, Ty would get the ball off the boards and throw a blind pass nearly to half court, knowing Danny would already be there. Or, Ty would draw two of three defenders to him in the low blocks and then kick it out to Danny, who kept launching that funny shot of his, though he was getting it more out in front like Richie had showed him, and scoring with ease from the outside. Then Richie would wait to see a smile or a fist pump from his kid, or any kind of change of expression. Only Danny never would. Like this was the way it was all supposed to be. There was a taller guard with a skinhead haircut who Danny couldn't guard sometimes, at least when Danny would let the skinhead get to his spot in close to the basket, but only if he could get to his spot. Danny's team won the first game of 11 baskets easy, Richie keeping score to himself, into it now, and they were about to do it again. It was 9-4, and here was Danny dribbling through a double team, the skinhead and the freckled kid who was just a little taller than Danny, beating them at the top of the key and stopping at the foul line and no-looking Ty with the perfect bounce pass for a layup. Richie felt himself give a little fist pump. As he did, he heard, Rich! The voice made him jump the way Allie had that night outside the house, like he was wearing some kind of sign these days that said, Please sneak up on me. Or maybe he was just so used to living deep inside his own head, blocking out everything. Noise, people, the world. He turned around to see Jeff Ross. Hey, Richie said. Hey yourself. Ross put his hand out. Richie shook it, studying him as he did. Little polo pony on the shirt, expensive sunglasses, what still looked to be a summer tan on him. Hair a little grayer and a little thinner than Richie remembered from the last time he'd seen him a couple of years ago, but the hair still hanging in there. You still look like money, Richie wanted to say. You always did. But you're no kid anymore. Of course,
How old do I look to him?
Ross nodded at the court.
Kind of fun watching the next generation have at it, he said.
Danny and Ty came up the court on a 2-on-1 break, passing the ball back and forth between them at warp speed, neither one of them taking a single dribble. Ty finally blowing past the long, skinny black kid trying to defend them, and Danny lofting a little pass that Ty caught and shot in one smooth motion. The crowd around the court, adults and kids, cheered like it was a real game.
Ball didn't touch the floor, Ross said.
Just like I teach them.
Richie turned so he was looking right at him.
Speaking of that, how did my kid not make your team, if you don't mind me asking?
Getting right to it. Knowing he sounded like every father of every kid who hadn't made the team and not giving a rat's ass.
Well, first of all, it's not my team, Ross said. And secondly, I didn't pick the team. My son was trying out too, and I'm the president of Middletown Basketball as well, so I took myself out of the process.
Richie let it go, like a bad shot that wasn't even worth contesting. They both knew it was bull.
Let me put it to you another way. What kind of process do you guys have going here if a kid that good doesn't make your team?
Ross took off his sunglasses, folded them, stuck them in the front of his polo pony shirt, like it was all part of a rich guy pose, buying time. He even cleared his throat.
My understanding with Danny, whom we all love, by the way, is that it just turned out to be close with him and a group of other guards, and he unfortunately had a bad second night of tryouts.
Who gives a sh-?
Richie put his hands out in front of him, trying not to get hot.
Who cares? He said. Have you been watching what I've been watching here? Anybody who knows anything about basketball can see how good he is. And he was on travel the last 2 years. Now you guys take him off because he has a bad night? Because he's too small? No kidding, Jeff. What's up with that?
It was clear that the only thing Jeff Ross had heard was the part about Danny being small.
Who said he didn't make the team because he was too small?
Didn't you tell those crackerjack basketball-savvy talent scouts of yours that you wanted the team to get bigger this year?
No, Rich, I most certainly did not. Did Danny tell you that?
Richie ignored him.
In sports, the best kids are supposed to make the team.
The evaluators were as fair as they could be.
Maybe they were fair, Richie said. But if they don't know what they're watching, they shouldn't be picking the stinking team.
I'm sorry you feel that way, Ross said.
He put the sunglasses back on like he was putting a mask back on.
But sports isn't always fair. I guess you know that better than anybody.
Now they were getting to it, and Richie knew they weren't just talking about the kids on the court.
Ross said, Here's something else you know. Sometimes the little guys have to play a little bigger when it counts. You turned away the wrong little guy, and you know it.
For somebody who's not around very often, Ross said, you've certainly taken a passionate interest in Danny's career all of a sudden.
I'm taking an interest in my kid, who just happens to be a hell of a player. That okay with you?
Ross said, Not all the players in town get the chance to be you, even when they're related to you. They were both watching the court now. As if on cue, Danny went behind his back with his own long arms, but those small hands, and dusted a fat kid who had just entered the game.
There used to be a rule back in our day where you could add a kid after the tryouts, Richie said. Put him on the team, Jeff.
And what do I tell the other kids who didn't make it? No, he can try out next year. That's the system.
Then the system stinks worse than the town dump.
Jeff Ross didn't say anything, so Richie kept going.
So that's the way it's gonna be? You're gonna get back at me through my kid?
This has nothing to do with you and me, Walker. But since you're such a concerned parent now, why not have your own damn system?
Dropping all pretense that they were going to be any more polite to each other now than they had been 20 years ago.
Maybe you should start your own team, Ross said, trying to be sarcastic. The Richie Walker All-Stars.
Richie was silent, staring at the court. Ross started walking toward the pond, away from the game, saying,
You were always a big movie guy, Rich. But life isn't always a movie. The little guy doesn't always win the day. I'll see you around.
Yeah. Ross left him standing there, alone again, watching the kids playing ball. Watching his kid. Richie Walker's All-Star. Chapter 8. He had to be leaving. When his dad came over for dinner, when it was an official visit to the house, scheduled in advance and not a drop-by, it almost always meant he was leaving the next day. At least he had stayed a whole week this time. Longer if you counted that first night in the driveway.
"Hold on there, Mr. Gloom and Doom," Allie Walker said when Danny ran his theory past her. "He didn't say anything about his travel plans. He never does, until the last possible minute. He just asked if it would be all right if the three of us had dinner. Even offered to take us out, sport. I told him to save his money. I'd whip up my famous wasp girl lasagna."
"At least he got to see me play at the fair," Danny said.
She was setting the table. Resetting it, actually. That meant she was putting the forks on the outside of the napkins, knives on the inside, after Danny had once again managed to do it the other way around. She looked up.
"You didn't tell me you saw him at the fair."
"I don't even know if he saw me see him. He was in the distance, kind of, just watching the game."
"Anyway," his mom said, "if he is leaving, he'll tell you.
You don't mind, by the way, him coming over?"
She was back in the kitchen, opening the oven door, checking out the famous lasagna, which was better than you got at Fiero's in town.
"He's your father. I have never tried to keep you two apart, you know that. I told him tonight that if you guys wanted to have a boys' night out, go for it. He said no, I was included."
"He's never not leaving when it's one of these."
"Double negative,"
his mom, the English teacher, said.
"Just negative," Danny said.
His dad showed up at 6:30 sharp, wearing a blue button-down shirt, khaki slacks, the kind of nubuck shoes kids wore with their school clothes, his hair slicked back and still wet from his shower. He was carrying a bottle of wine. Danny had been up in his room playing last year's NBA game on PlayStation when he heard the doorbell. When he came down the stairs, he noticed that his mom had found time to change out of her school clothes into a green, silky-looking blouse with some kind of print on it you didn't notice at first, and khaki-colored pants of her own, her slacks looking a lot nicer than what his dad had on. The kind of dress-up clothes she'd wear when she went out to dinner with a friend, male or female. Though, Danny had to say, there weren't a lot of males in Middletown she would give the time of day to. It was Danny's impression that his mom was about as interested in dating as she was in video games. But she dressed up tonight for his dad, whatever that meant. Maybe he'd ask Tess online later how much he should read into something like that. Danny Walker, even at 12, was smart enough to know this about girls. They were smarter than boys already. They were smarter about all the important stuff in life that didn't include sports, and would stay smarter from now on, which meant that he and the rest of the boys would be playing catch-up, trying to come from behind the rest of the way.
"You look nice," his dad said.
"You still clean up pretty well yourself," his mom said.
It was Will Stoddard's theory that adults, even cool adults, behaved like space aliens about half the time, and now here it was right in front of Danny's eyes. With all the rotten things his mom could say to his dad when they were alone, she still wanted to look her best when he came over. The three of them sat in the living room before dinner, eating cheese and crackers. His mom drank some of the wine he'd brought. His dad drank beer out of a bottle. Danny got to have a Coke, on account of, he figured, this being a special occasion. Whatever the occasion was. His mom tried to find out how things were going for his dad in that casual way she had, asking questions you were supposed to believe had just popped into her head, all the time getting to the one she hoped would make you spill your guts. He was still living in Oakland, he said, even though his lease was about to be up. Said the Warriors had talked about him doing some work for them in community relations, but he hadn't decided yet. He had done some scouting for them in the past, but had quit that, saying he was tired of watching people he didn't know or care about play games he couldn't play. He had thought assistant coaching might be different, taking a job at the University of San Francisco last season. But he had quit that, too. He had quit a lot of things since the accident, Danny knew. "So it's back to the card shows," Allie Walker said, "which you love so dearly." The most money he'd made the past several years was from making appearances at card and memorabilia shows. "It's not so bad if you limit the conversation."
"Your specialty."
His mom was smiling when she said it.
Most people are all right. Step right up and see the guy who used to be Richie Walker.
He drank down about half his beer in one gulp, like he was incredibly thirsty all of a sudden.
You're right, he said. I hate it.
Now came one of those record-breaking, world-class silences that made you wonder if any member of the Walker family would say anything ever again. Until Danny said, "When are you leaving?"
"It's actually what I wanted to talk to you both about."
She clapped her hands together.
"Well, let's do it at the dinner table before the lasagna turns into leftovers."
They passed the rolls and salad around. His dad remarked that her lasagna was as good as ever. She said, "Thank you, sir." She asked how things were at the place known in Middletown as the Inn. He said, "Hey, they even had cable there now." Finally, he put down his fork and said, "Listen, I'm thinking about hanging around for a while." His mom had her wine glass nearly to her lips, stopped it right there.
"In Middletown?"
"Yeah." Danny thinking,
"Yeah."
His mom said, "What about the fabulous card show appearances?"
"There's enough of them around here," he said,
"even though the money's not that great for somebody like me anywhere." He gave her a look and said, "As you know better than anyone else."
"We're all right, Rich."
Danny couldn't wait.
"What are you going to do here?" he said.
Richie Walker said, "I was thinking about coaching."
Danny's mom said, "You're going to coach a team in Middletown?"
"Yeah. An opportunity just presented itself in the past couple of days."
Danny and his mom waited. Sometimes you could try to wait his dad out on something, and he'd be out the door and gone, and you'd still be waiting. But this time was different. Danny'd had this feeling there was something he'd been waiting to tell them since he walked in the front door.
"To tell you the truth," he said, "it's an opportunity I sort of created for myself."
"Dad!"
Danny didn't mean it to come out as loud as it did, but there it was.
"Who are you going to coach?"
"You," he said.
"Me."
His mom said, "In the Y League?" Richie Walker was smiling now, even with his eyes.
"You know what this town needs even more than cable TV at the Inn?"
Danny grabbed his arm.
"What?"
"Another seventh grade travel team," his dad said. Chapter 9. Richie came back from the kitchen with a brand new beer, drinking it out of the bottle this time. When he sat back down, Danny started asking questions immediately.
Like, "How are we going to get games?"
His dad said, "I'll call the Tri-Valley League and see if they've got room for one more team. If not, I'll get phone numbers for coaches and call them on my own. It's seventh grade ball, after all. We're not trying to join the Big East." They were all sitting around the coffee table, Danny and his dad on the floor, his mom on the couch, his dad showing them the to-do list he'd been scribbling on Runyon's napkins. Allie said, "But won't they have their schedules set? There's still a month to go before the season starts. I'm hoping they'll try to work something out on account of, she said, "you're Richie Walker."
"Yeah,"
he said.
"What's left of him, anyway."
Danny said,
"Even if we come up with enough players, where are we going to practice? Everybody was saying at the fair that because of what happened to the Springs gym, there's not enough practice time for anybody."
His mom said, "I can help at St. Pat's, but you may have to practice at some weird hours. Maybe after homework instead of before, as long as all the parents are willing."
Richie said, "What do they charge?"
"I don't honestly know, but I'll ask."
Danny said,
"You think we can really get into the league?"
Richie said, "If we don't, we'll be one of those independent teams like they have in minor league baseball. You know, where all the bad boys go when they come out of drug rehab and nobody will give them a job."
His dad held up a couple of his napkins and said, "Hey, I don't have all the answers here, at least not yet."
Danny said,
"But if we don't get into the league, how do we get into the tournament?"
Richie said he might have one more beer.
Allie said, "Why don't I go make up a quick pot of coffee instead?" Not even asking if he wanted coffee.
She came back 5 minutes later with two mugs, handing Richie one, saying, "Milk, two sugars," as she did. They all sat down on the living room floor like they were unwrapping some kind of Christmas present.
on the kind of Christmas morning Danny thought they'd never had.
"Listen," his dad said, "all we are right now is the Middletown cocktail napkins, and you're already worried about making the tournament?